Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on Talk Sport. Sad news last month that Mohamed El Fayed had died, the former owner of Fulham Football Club. Our next guest had already more or less compiled a book on the El Fayed years. When the news arose, he has found a way to expand on it, an ingenious way. And he joins us now. Tony Banks is the author of The Great Adventure, El Fayed's Roller Coaster Ride with Fulham FC.
Afternoon, Tony.
Good chaps, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Bittersweet, really. I mean, you're telling the story at a timely moment when he sadly passed away. But obviously, you're not able to reflect that in the book. But we say you found a way to give us a bonus chapter.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate, really. I mean, the book was already in the warehouse and ready to be distributed when sadly he passed away. So what we did was we wrote an extra chapter, and if you click on the link on the cover, you can get that. You can get the extra chapter with all the quotes, and you get a new intro as well. So it's the only way we could do it, really.
The good, I mean, from your point of view as an author, his story is very much in the consciousness, because we saw lots of footage in the tributes to him, and the story was told for what he did for Fulham. So I think a lot of people that maybe didn't know a great deal about it would have piqued their interest from your point of view, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good tale. I mean, it's essentially a history book, but obviously, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. Him passing away at that point obviously brings him back into the public consciousness, as it does with Fulham. So it doesn't do me any harm, so to speak.
Where were the club at? Just remind us, where were the club at when he came in? He bought a Premier League football club for £6.5 million. You'd struggle to do that now, wouldn't you?
They just got promoted from the old Division 3 under Mickey Adams. And so it was May 97. They'd just come out of the bottom division. And he swooped in and bought and paid an initial sort of £6.25 million for the club, but obviously ploughed in a lot more after that. Came in with big promises, you know, I'm going to get to the Premier League in 5 years. I'm going to rebuild the stadium. It was exciting
stuff.
Were the
fans having him, Tony, at the time, do you remember?
Well, there was suspicion.
Yeah.
Because Fulham fans have been down this road before because let's face it, Craven Cottage is a prime piece of property.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And they'd been down that road, I don't know if you remember, a few years back when there was talk of merging them with QPR. I think that was in the 80s.
There was a ground share for a bit as well, wasn't there, at QPR?
There was, but there was actual talk of them merging
those
clubs. This is in the 80s. And this was Marler Estates, and Fulham fans will remember those names with a shudder. And that was fended off. But there was suspicion. I mean, this is a tycoon who owns Harrods, owns the Ritz. What's he getting involved in us for? You know, we're only a little Division 2 club, you know. So there was a degree of suspicion,
I've actually been quite a lot. I used to live in the area. I've got a very good friend who's a big Fulham fan. So actually, over the years, they used to play Torquay. I'm a Torquay United fan.
Right.
I went home and away and watched Torquay v Fulham. I don't think you've beaten us in 20 years.
I'll just add that.
You might do now. But I when I moved as a student to London, I went. So you had the Tigana years, didn't you? John Tigana. And the Keegan years. And Al Fayed was at the forefront of all that, and it was success, wasn't it? It was always very successful, and good football and a great ground, you know.
Absolutely, you can't look on his period in charge and say it wasn't a success. I mean, there were some bumpy bits along the road. There's no doubt about
the statue.
That.
The Michael Jackson statue,
the various sackings of managers when they didn't come up to scratch, some of which were a bit more harsh than others.
Yeah.
But you can't look on that 16-year period and say it wasn't a success, because, you know, they ended up in the Premier League in 4 years and they got to a European final.
Yeah.
And they finished seventh, don't forget, 1 year in the Premier League. So it wasn't entirely a smooth ride, which I try to reflect in the book. It's not all roses, you know. There's some bumpy bits in there.
At one point, he thought he'd signed. There was a bit of a breakdown in communications, and he thought he'd signed Brazilian Ronaldo. Is that right?
Ronaldo went into Harrods to do a book launch. His autobiography, and he didn't speak very good English, which I think is key to this story. El Fayed wanders down and says, "Oh, you must come and play for Fulham." And Ronaldo doesn't know he's on about. So he says, "Yeah, all right, you know." About 2 weeks later, The Fulham officials are sitting in the chief executive's office at Craven Cottage, and Alfie rings up and says, "Get hold of Ronaldo's agent. I want him on Saturday for the Liverpool game." And they're going, "It didn't work like that, you know."
Yeah.
And it never happened. But that was kind of indicative of some of the madcap things that he did. You know, he didn't really understand football. That's got to be said, and that frustrated him at times. You know, with agents and stuff like that, and he didn't get it. Really.
What was he like to work with? Because you've spoken to Chris Coleman, Laurie Sanchez, and Roy Hodgson and stuff. What did they say? What was he like to work with as a chairman?
Pretty hands off in terms of letting them get on with picking the team and the squad and all that. And it was a bit nerve wracking when you had to go, as I think several managers have said, when you have to go up those big stairs in Harrods and he makes you wait for half an hour, go through the security, then you get, you know, behind the big desk and you don't know what's going to happen. But most of the time he was too busy, and he'd say, Chris Coleman tells a good story where he went in on a Friday afternoon after working all week, waited about 2 hours, and Alfie had said, "This is what we're going to do." And he unfolded a big book, and it was actually a cardboard model of what he wanted to do with Craven Cottage. Then he says, "Are we all right for tomorrow?" And Coleman says, "Yeah." And he goes, "Right, okay, see ya." And that was it. He was very busy.
Yeah.
Always very busy.
Mm. Jean Tigana, I always remember that time when he came in and he thought dental health was obviously incredibly key, something he picked up in France. And he sent all the Fulham players to the dentist, didn't they? All went off there to their check, because he thought often the root of a tight hamstring was through one of your wisdom teeth.
Yeah, he thought teeth were crucial to the body's balance. Mm. And Lee Clark tells a tale in the book where he was sent off to Paris to visit this top quality dental surgeon and get his wisdom teeth removed, and didn't speak a word of French and got it done. But apparently it was crucial. It wasn't the only thing. It was all sorts of new, and at the time, which was about 2000, this was revolutionary. From Wenger, no one else was doing this. Diets, weights, body fat, all sorts of stuff was going on, and people like Coleman said they have never been fitter in their lives.
Mm. And some great players, well, I mean, Saha started there, and didn't you have John Collins and Collins John at the same time?
No, Collins John arrived slightly later under Coleman, but John Collins arrived during the Tigana. He was a very important signing because he was Tigana at the first didn't speak very good English, but Collins had worked with him at Monaco, so he was his kind of voice on the pitch, and he provided the kind of on-pitch instruction. Great player as well.
And from his point of view, he walked away 16 years later and made a profit on the club, understandably. He had pumped a lot into it. I mean, he sold it for more than he paid for it, but whether he made a profit, I don't know.
No, I don't think he made a profit. He plowed a lot of money into it, and sort of he sold it to Khan without any debt.
Yeah.
So I don't think he made a profit out of it, but he got some of his money back anyway. You know,
and you know, we've seen plenty of clubs sold to owners that turn up being an absolute disaster. How do you feel about that transfer of power and the job that the Khan family had done?
A bit up and down, isn't it? There's been about two relegations and two promotions, and they went through a period of very, very quickly getting rid of managers. You'll remember Felix McGarth, Keith Simons, Rennie Mullenstein, all went, it came in and out the door very quickly till they settled. Well, they didn't really settle down because Scott Parker came in and then went, you know. A little bit up and down, but, I mean, they're still in the Premier League, so you can't really argue with it. You know, he's a little bit more, Khan's mostly in America. It's his son, Tony Khan, is on the day-to-day. So they're a little bit more hands-off than I think Al Fayed was.
There's this issue at the moment with ticket prices. We spoke to Tom Greatrix yesterday, Charlie's mate.
He's in the book.
Yeah, from the Football Supporters Association. And you know, they said they're not really having a go at the Khan and the ownership. They're just not happy with this ticketing policy. But, I mean, effectively, that comes from the top, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think it's very unwise. I mean, you haven't got a huge supporter base there. You don't want to alienate them. You're talking, what, 25,000 people? 20 to 25 who go and watch Fulham regularly. I know it's a reasonably wealthy supporter base, but not all of them. I think they've got to be very careful about this, you know.
Yeah. Well, Tony, lovely to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. We wish you well with the book. It's called The Great Adventure, Al Fayed's Roller Coaster Ride with Fulham FC. There is a bonus chapter, they say, on the inside front cover on the sleeve, there is a a QR code that you can read that bonus chapter to put his time at the club into focus after his sad passing. And it's available now, published by Pitch. Just to let you know that Sri Lanka have avoided...
Ah, what a shame.
...making history as the lowest score, not only in one-day cricket, but in one-day World Cup cricket. They have got over the 36 mark, which would have made them infamous in a World Cup. They're on 37 for 8. I mean, still not a stunning score, and they're unlikely to get 358, I would guess. But anyway, we'll keep an eye on that one for you. It's Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker here on TalkSport with their good friends at Toolstation. Grab great deals across power tools and accessories now at Toolstation.